Welcome to episode 20 of the TV Autopsy, slicing its way through a series you love. My name is James.
My name is Deborah.
And I am Megan.
Happy New Year again.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So, that year flew by, didn't it? 2023.
2024. Yeah, because episode 19, our last episode, was back in October.
Yes. So we are going to be working very hard to be a little bit more current, aren't we? And a little bit more up to date, I should say. So we're going to aim for one a month, hopefully.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not asking for sympathy or pity, but we've all been very busy as ever, I imagine. And I'm sure you, listener, have been busy too. But you're making the time to listen to us, so we need to make the time to record this for you. So, anyone got any news? New year, new start, new news. I thought you girls would be teeming with news.
Well, I mean, there's lots to watch.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. I mean, the only news I've got really is the news. And the fact that the news recently has been dominated by a television programme all about the post office.
The computer system Post Office spent an arm and a leg on is faulty.
No one else has ever reported any problems with Horizon. No one.
You're responsible for the loss.
I haven't got that money, and I don't know where it's gone.
These deficits were most likely caused by you. That is the Post Office case.
All our hopes, all our savings down the pan.
That was a lie, actually.
We are fighting a war against an enemy owned by the British government.
I think it's done very simply and easily digestible in a way that everyone can understand it and be infuriated by it. And I think that's its success, really. It's not, they don't overcomplicate things.
No.
It's a twee in places, but it's fine. It's just, you know, it's straightforward.
I think they tried to tackle the personal element. So I was aware of the issues and that there were these horrendous prosecutions. I wasn't aware of the scale, and it's none of the journalistic style has ever really quite got across the real personal impacts that it's had. And I think that's what the Mr. Bates versus the Post Office.
Yeah, the humanised.
Anyone's not
everybody.
Sure what we're talking about. Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, I think it has done a remarkable job at really telling certain individual stories and representing just the sheer awfulness of how before they teamed up to create the campaign, these individual upstanding members of society were just absolutely targeted and pursued relentlessly by the Post Office. Absolutely horrendous.
You know, some of these ended in suicides and things like that, didn't they?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. And played by Will Mellor, is he Mr. Bates?
No.
No, Toby Jones is Mr. Bates.
Oh, wonderful.
Toby Jones is Mr. Bates. Will Mellor is just one of the many sub-postmasters.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's the side of his story, he had one of the biggest financial impacts in that he chose to challenge it in court. And an awful lot of the miscarriages of justice got taken on the basis that people ended up pleading guilty to false accounting. He refused to plead guilty, could not afford legal representation, represented himself in court, but the Post Office ponied up all the legal power that was at their beck and call, and then had their costs because he then lost the case because they were so adamant that it couldn't possibly be the IT system Horizon's fault for all the errors, that he then also had the post office's legal costs,
yeah,
awarded. Wow. So he was on, even on top of the fine that he was given and the amount he had to repay that the post office said he owed, he then had another £320,000 worth of legal costs.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I take it you've not seen it, James. No.
I'm just, I haven't seen it. But I've been listening avidly to lots of radio debates about it. So it is something I'm going to watch. Do you think that in this ever-changing medium of television, that this is maybe the place for things like ITV and possibly the BBC, who haven't got the money to compete with giants like Netflix or Disney Plus, maybe for the big bucks and the big, you know, effect driven dramas, but maybe these more tailor-made focused British
revealing scandals.
Well, maybe, yeah.
But so my first thought would be, I think BBC would struggle to have been able to tell the story, because it's paid for by the license payers, therefore it's public money, therefore the government level of input, and even though it's supposed to be independent and still not influenced,
we know that's not the case
because of various other hoo-has that we've had over the course of the last 12 months. So I think the BBC would have struggled to actually be able to produce it. And I think also there's a big... I was listening to some podcast. It might have been The Rest Is Politics with Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell. It could have been something else, because obviously, as you said, it's been talked about everywhere. Mm. But one of the things they were... Oh, maybe it was The Rest Is Entertainment, which I shouldn't be plugging because it talks about telly, with Richard Osman. But they were talking about the fact that the BBC, in deciding what they're going to spend their money on, they have to look at the resale value and can they sell it globally to other countries to stream. And I can't imagine that on paper Mr. Bates versus the post office is going to have that sort of appetite. I mean, it may well end up being something that does get franchised
up elsewhere
on a broader basis, but I would have thought someone like the BBC would steer clear, and they were quite surprised that even the ITV had touched it. I mean, I think we're all very glad that they did, but
yeah,
that's very interesting actually, because it kind of links to one of the things I wanted to talk about, which is the resurgence of Doctor Who.
I just knew.
We're about to enter the fascinating sphere of police work, the world of forensic medicine.
I'm a massive Doctor Who fan, but also... Doctor Who is, I mean, it's hardly, like hardly controversial.
it was going to fall from your lips.
Did you know that Doctor Who, half of it is now paid for by Disney Plus?
Yes.
Okay.
I did not, but I don't care that much. So I didn't clock it.
Well, you may not care, but I care. We recently have had the new Disney-fied Doctor Who in
You can tell that they've chucked in a load of money. I've not watched it. It was on because Laurie was watching it and so on, but you can see the money has been pumped.
Do the sets not good. Shake anymore?
They haven't shaken since about 1973, but you're pushing all my Doctor Who triggers.
Merry Christmas.
I'm the Doctor.
What's up there?
Goblins.
David Tennant and Catherine Tate back for 3 episodes. Going over the glory days, basically, of because it was when they were on, in I think 2008, 2009, something like that. It was that one of the highest watched TV programmes. It was beating Doctor Who, it was beating Coronation Street regularly, and obviously EastEnders, so it was top of the charts.
Now they have the new Corrie girl that's in it.
They do indeed. So, yeah, I mean, just in a nutshell, those three episodes were okay. Russell T. Davis has come back, Queer as Folk, and what was the one we reviewed?
It's a Sin.
That guy, he's come back to continue the mantle and to make the Hooniverse. So obviously we're going to have loads of spin-off shows. But he kept going on about how things were going to be so different and it was all going to be like you've never seen before. And really, he kind of came back and did exactly what he was doing in 2005.
So. I thought he'd changed some of the rules, which the Doctor Who committee kind of went, OK, you can do that.
All right, so, yeah, I mean, just to be very clear, every four or five years or so, when the Doctor changes his or her face, or perhaps, let's be more specific, the production team behind it, usually there's a great deal of change. So, you know, he wasn't a Time Lord until, like, 1975, I think, when a writer decided to write all the Gallifreyan lore. And then in the TV movie in 1996, we were told that he was half human, which soon got brushed under the carpet. Only in Jodie Whittaker's time, we found out that he was not actually from Gallifrey, but from a different universe, which has kind of gone by the wayside as well, a little bit as well. So this time, there are two doctors popping up at the same time instead of regenerating into another. So he did regenerate to Shitigatwa, leaving David Tennant, to a lot of people's surprise and shock and disappointment, hanging around with Donna in the garden with Bonnie Langford so they could have lots of lovely salads and barbecues and he could have a rest because he's tired, so have a rest, which doesn't make any sense. Yeah, well, what, unfortunately, this Russell T. Davis has now said that the reason he has done this, what's he called it, biogenital regeneration or whatever.
Biogenital.
Well, I can't remember. But the reason for doing this is that all the old doctors also did this, which means that all the old actors who are popping around still alive, who played the doctor,
pop up and do a guest appearance.
But they've already kind of done that in the last series. And
yeah,
I mean, to be really frank, as much as I, and if you go on, BBC iPlayer now, you can find any alive previous Doctor, except for Tom Baker, who is literally about 100. but all the others have done a little guest shot with their companion, introducing one of their old stories, basically, in a memory TARDIS.
I mean,
but they're all
to be fair, all these series that create their own universes and establish rules, evolve those rules to suit their purpose.
Yeah.
As you go along, and it's, oh, vampires, ooh, garlic, ooh, can't go out in the daylight. And then it's like, ooh, can't go out in direct daylight. Ooh, so long as we've got, you know, an umbrella over us, we're fine. It's like,
And if you've been going for
always
as long,
be compromised for the sake of a story if they feel the story is strong enough.
And if you've been going for as long as Doctor Who, I mean, this has been happening since the start, making up a rule. I mean, it was only on like the first series that they said you can't change history, not one line. It was like from the Aztecs or something. Now, obviously, that's been forgotten about because obviously you can. Otherwise, you wouldn't be you'd be kind of stuck in situations where you wouldn't be able to do anything about anything. So, yeah. So, anyway, all good luck to them. Shitigatwa, very briefly, turned up, and then he had his own episode at Christmas with a load of goblins. Not really for me, but, Doctor Who isn't really for me. I'm not, a middle-aged white guy from South London.
Yet you follow it religiously anyway.
Yes, I do. And
but I think the biggest following of Doctor Who are middle-aged white guys and generally of the gay persuasion. The amount of gay men that I know that are middle-aged and white that love it and follow it, it's more than middle-aged straight guys, more
a rather niche fan club, Deborah.
So
however, I will probably come back. I'd like to come back and talk to you about that after the first series of Shooting Gattaca, because Russell T. Davies, one thing he can do is mark it. And, you know, the song from the Doctor Who episode was right up there and in the charts. And I think you will be seeing Shooty's face all over, all a load of merchandise. And I think it's going to be very popular again. I may be wrong, but I don't think I am. So let's see.
Yeah, cool.
Right, so that was mine. Who'd like to take the mantle next?
Go, Megan.
So, just to talk about a big box office, well, not box office, because it hasn't gone to the cinema, it's a series, but the big, one of the big series that dropped over the Christmas period was Netflix, Harlem Coben, Coben Harlands.
Fool Me Once.
Fool Me Once.
I'm sorry for your
poor
loss.
Girl. First your sister, now your husband.
Man, I like Joe. Joe was good people.
Do you trust her? You know me. You trust no one, Maya.
So I watched that.
Yeah.
Despite promising myself I was never going to watch one of them again. After one of the previous ones.
Oh, what did you say before?
Oh, so he wrote Safe that got dramatized. Yeah. There's maybe three or four.
Yeah.
And they always annoy me because they're so twist upon twist upon twist. And it's, you know,
I don't know what these are about. Could you explain what it's about?
So, For Me Once is on Netflix, starring Michelle Keegan and Joanna Lumley. I finished watching it last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go, Meg.
Yeah. Sorry. And so they're generally kind So the For Me Once premise is that Michelle Keegan plays Maya, who is an ex and disgraced ex captain. Who used to fly helicopters for the army in, well, overseas in presumably Afghanistan, based on the timeline. And her husband is murdered, and it's kind of her, it's the trying to work out and find out exactly what happened around her husband's murder. And we then very rapidly find out that her sister had not long been also murdered. So it starts to stitch together a bunch of coincidences. So I'm not going to give anything more than that away. But there's a couple of key things around it. One is, I think the dramatizations or the books, they're all based on books that Harlan Coben writes. Is it Harlan Coben or Coben Harlan?
Harlan Coben.
Harlan Coben.
Yeah.
So they're all based on his books, and his books are set in the US. And they then get translated and televised in the UK. So they get shifted to the UK to be dramatised. And I'm not sure they always work. And I particularly don't think Fool Me Once worked as a UK dramatisation. I think some of the scenes and craziness, I just can't see
happening
in British society.
I wanted it to do well. Because I really like Michelle Keegan. I loved her as Tina in Coronation Street, and I thought she was one of the strongest actors. And I've not seen her in My Girl or any of the other things that she's sort of been in, only bits and pieces of something that she was in the 60s or something. But I really wanted her to do well. And to be fair, she is a good actress, and there were good performances from people. But it's just, as you say, Megan, there's something about the direction or the dramatization that just didn't seem believable. And then it just became really far-fetched in the end. But by the time I'd got into like episode four, I was invested and I had to see it to the end.
Yeah, because by that time it was coming out that they'd had the biggest twist nobody was expecting right at the very end. And it was a good twist at the end. All right. That I didn't see it coming. There were bits of it that I was waiting for something involving certain things to happen, but I didn't see that specifically coming. But I didn't think Michelle Keegan, Joanna Lumley, or the two police officers were well cast. they didn't work for me.
Yeah, I don't think Michelle was well cast. No, although she was good, she was not.
But altogether as well, I didn't feel it. I didn't feel it cohesively.
Very different schools. I mean, I think the policeman's really good. I've forgotten his name. Adil Akbar, is it?
I can't remember.
I think he's really good because he was kind of understated, but it was like there were all three different.
But his sidekick was terrible.
Yeah, yeah, he was awful. But bad comedy. But the comedy didn't land for me. But like you had Joanna Lumley, who was doing a style of acting, and then you had Michelle Keegan, who was doing a style of acting, and then you had Adil doing another style of acting. So, of course, it didn't gel. It just didn't.
Yeah. And I think had the same story been based in the US, I could have, like the helicopter scene, I could have swallowed that a little bit more if it was US, but I just couldn't suspend the disbelief on that. It was ridiculous. And
you know when you're flashing towards the, I think it's the last episode where she's flashbacking to being in that helicopter and you're watching her hand pull, you know, and doing all the, you know, the joystick and pressing the buttons. And she's got this perfectly French manicured pair of hands.
And, beautiful fake eyelashes. I'm like, no way.
Yeah, the French manicure that she's got is exactly the same manicure that she's got where she's sitting on the sofa, thinking about being back in wherever it was, Afghanistan. It's like, I'm sorry, but if you're
no, I agree.
An army, you know, chopper rider, I'm sure your fingernails wouldn't be that good.
I 100% agree. So I struggled with an awful lot of it, and it was disappointing. Fool me more than once, it turns out, as far as Harlan Coben traumatizations are.
You don't think it's worth watching any of his previous ones then? Are they all done by the BBC as well?
Do you know what?
I
would watch Safe. That's probably the best of them. Some of the others, I was just like, they were just, you know, twist upon twist upon twist. And I really struggle with that style, because if you see all those twists, there's an awful lot that you know is just rammed in there for the sake of it. I mean, there were just some terrible plot lines in this one.
Yeah.
And that you're just like, well, so the sister had gone to great lengths to hide...
Yeah.
Burner phones, but they found out who she was calling, and they find this big, like, WikiLeaks type computer
whistleblower
there.
Yeah.
Because she actually phoned an actual business on an actual landline, and it was just like, that just would not have happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, there were a lot of plot holes.
So, that's your flatliner.
Would you be better off watching Midsummer Murders? I caught nearly a whole episode the other day. And I was amazed at how easy to watch those things are. I mean, it's just a load of famous people. I mean, you do recognise... It's amazing how they keep getting different actors, really.
Yeah, there's a lot of... What were they in? Yeah.
I mean, even though there's murders, it's all very nice. You know, it's lovely settings and stuff like that. So I might just go back and watch some of those over the winter period. Deborah!
So that obviously was a bit of a flatliner for me as well, Megan. I saw quite a few things, a few flatliners. I think Bodies was a bit of a flatliner for me, starring Stephen Graham. Netflix, that was on. Anyone seen that?
At 6 a.m. on the 10th of September, a man was murdered on Long Harvest Lane.
There's not one hit on any database. No DNA on record, no prints. No bullet casings were discovered on the scene, and no exit wound either.
That's impossible.
The murder is out there.
Bodies.
I've watched the first two or three episodes and ground to a little bit of a halt. I have been told that it was absolutely worth persevering, but I have not persevered.
I don't think it's really worth persevering.
What's it about, Deborah?
So it's a really fascinating concept, really good concept. So you're modern day police officers out in London on the beat. There's some kind of protest or something going on. So they're just being there. One of the police officers who we are following, one of the protagonists, she just spots a bit of dodgy behaviour, a couple of lads that she thinks, oh, hang on, this looks a bit, this could be a bit dangerous, decides to follow one. Eventually what you find is she runs down an alleyway and there is a dead, naked body lying on the floor of a man. And he's in a certain position. And then we skip to another timeline where I think it's Victorian.
Yes, I have heard about this and the same murder.
And another detective, a detective from the Victorian era, finds exactly this body lying there, same alleyway in London, la la la. Then you skip to the Second World War era.
Yeah.
Another detective sees the same body. And then in the future, so we're talking 30 years from now, another detective finds the same body. So you've got four different timelines. And Stephen Graham is something to do with all four of these timelines. Now, the actual concept and the story is really interesting. And I think it would make for a really interesting read. I just think the delivery of it all was a bit kind of pants.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, I've got another couple. I just wanted to talk briefly about, did anybody watch the latest series of The Crown?
No, not gone back and picked it up. I think I've got the last two seasons to catch up on The Crown.
How about you, Deborah? Have you watched it? Oh, thank you for that, frozen. Deborah. She has frozen. Let's see. Hello, Deborah. Okay. Well, I've seen it, luckily, which is why I'm going to talk about it. It's really the series about Diana, with Diana being the focus, really, because it's all about the car crash and the build-up to that and what happens. I think it was...
Is it the last ever season?
No, we've got one more. So
one more.
I think they're going to wrap it up now, because they'll probably end with the funeral, I imagine.
Well, they'll be up to date, won't they?
Yeah, thank goodness she died. We can wrap it all up. But I've enjoyed it quite a lot. I think one thing that has bothered me slightly is, as I was driving back into London from being away from somewhere, there was a massive billboard of Diana and William from the show's face. And Diana does look quite like her. And I don't know. I know it was like 20 years ago, but if I was William, I'd be a bit upset about that, probably. So, but, you know, I know it's not like she hasn't been televised everywhere and stuff. So I don't know. It just seemed a bit weird. But it's, and obviously, as we know, they, just like on The Only Way Is Essex and... A 90 Day Fiance, they make up the scenes.
90 Day Fiance.
I'm all over that one. That's my other one to talk about. I can't stop watching that show. To be honest, my partner is a big fan of 90 Day Fiance, and so he's made me sit and watch a lot of it. So,
sorry, I'm back. I completely missed everything.
Oh, no, it's okay. We've done The Crown, and I was just finishing my little bit off saying that I've been watching a lot of 90 Day Fiancé. And actually, the more you watch, the more...
A lot what?
90 Day Fiancé. The more you watch, the more compelling it becomes, even though...
Is it an American show?
90 yes. Day Fiancé.
The premise is you've got someone who basically goes and finds someone who needs a green card... They've got 90 days to make them to get married and stuff like that. And it's watching them. Yeah.
For a green card.
I think that's a premise. Yeah. Yeah. Because
it's got to be legal, surely.
Well, they're looking for love. But this is, I mean, obviously, it's all played to the cameras, but there is this guy.
In a few days, I'm getting ready to get on a plane and go meet Rose, the love of my life, for the very first time. I'm super excited because I also bought a ring and I plan to ask Rose to marry me. Since I met Rose, I want to look young for her. So I have been dyeing my hair, and it irritates my scalp. So I found out that mayonnaise makes it smoother and less dry. I'm self-conscious of my physical appearance because Rose is 31 years younger than me. I smell like an egg salad sandwich.
And he goes and meets this girl in some, you know, I can't remember where it is, but oh my God. I mean, you could tell that she just doesn't like him at all. And he's there going, I love you and all this kind of stuff. But she's there suddenly bringing her sister over, and then her mum dies halfway through the episodes. It's all very peculiar. Anyway, it's must-watch TV.
What's that to do with Beyonce?
Well, they're getting married, these two. It's a reality TV show.
Oh, Beyonce. I thought you said Beyonce.
What's the difference?
That would be a very different program.
Did you say Beyonce?
Yes.
Oh, no, not her. No, did you say Beyonce?
If you want it, you better put a ring on it. If you like it, you better put a ring on it. These ties are all up very nicely. 90 Day, Beyonce, Fiance.
Anyway,
the theme tune, put a ring on it.
I've seen a lot of 90 Day Fiance. And obviously, if you are a fan, you'll be pleased to know there are a number of spin-off shows. There's about six of these shows featuring the characters of 90 Day Fiancé. Sometimes they're in a hotel together. Sometimes they're on holiday together. Sometimes they're just going on a road trip. But you can follow the characters wherever you like.
So presumably the basic premise is they spend 90 days together and then decide whether or not they want to get married.
Well, I think so. I mean, I haven't got that far yet, to be honest.
I bet the other series 11. I can guarantee if I spent 90 days together with a single person, one of us would probably then be arrested for murder.
Murder.
Like, out of the blue, you suddenly spend 90 days with somebody. I mean, that's brutal. No one's going to survive that.
Talking about surviving,
I watched on Netflix the Squid Game Challenge game, and that was really fantastic. I loved it.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I did hear good things.
Yes.
Don't give Rain away any spoilers.
No. Have you seen the original Squid Game?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, for those of you that are listening, the US did a game version of this, and it's really good. You become very invested in the people that are taking part, and... there are a few twists and turns in it. There are people that you hate in it that hope die.
Do they die? Because they die in the show, don't they?
Yeah. So obviously it's not as horrific.
Like the adventure game, they get put out in space. And
I love the adventure game.
like if you went and did paintballing, so it's a bit like Splat, and it's grey paint, and it's and they've obviously just got little poppers underneath their coats and t-shirts and things. So when they do die, they usually look really pissed off at first because something's happened where they're like, oh no, I've done a boo-boo. So they look really pissed off when they explode in their chest, and then they do this kind of pretend fake, you know, death. And some of them like do just fall over and just die and lie on the floor and wait. And then others go, oh, okay, I'm going to do a really long death and I'll just sort of fall and be dramatic. It's really good. And the gameplay is really good. The people
did they just do the same games?
So that's the twist. So you are led to believe that some of the games, because some of the games are the same, right? And so they kind of go down this path thinking they're going to get all the same games. And that was a lot of the downfall with a number of them. Because like, we know what to expect next. So we're going to befriend these people and get into that team because they're going to be the strongest, most able-bodied team. And then actually they were faced with something completely different. So it's really good. But it's all very much the same. You know, there's the pink stairs up and down and all that, you know, when they're going from one room to another. Really, really good. Visually really great.
It sounds like there were a lot of traitors in that show, though.
Yeah, and that's another one we're watching. Is watching The Traitors.
Oh!
Here lies a kind and generous soul. Someone who is loyal, trusting, and faithful. No wonder they're no longer with us. Welcome to the game.
It's a bit extreme, isn't it?
Play it nice. Woo. You could end up 6 feet under. Play it dirty.
I'll be looking at you after this.
Wow.
And you might come out on top.
You're a traitor.
22 people play the ultimate game of treachery for a life-changing cash prize. The Traitors.
Let's talk about Traitors. Which, come on, I have to say, is the best television programme ever.
It's so good.
No, better. It is so good. And link it, like you say on the Squid Games, Deborah, they all pitched up this time on season two, thinking they knew exactly what to expect.
Yeah.
And I think that the production team has switched it up and changed it around just enough to keep it interesting and to destabilize the players. And I think it's brilliant.
It's so good. It is so good. And I'm not sure, because I've seen Australia, US, and the first UK one. And Australia came first, then the second one was the UK version, and then the US version with Alan Cumming. Now we've got this version again with the UK. I don't think there are any others. Somebody mentioned that there was a Canadian one and they were all really nice to each other, but I'm not sure if that's true or if there have been any other.
This is stereotypical.
I know. I work for a Canadian bank. I just found it so hilarious. Oh, they were just so nice to each other. But I don't know if it does exist, and if there are any second seasons of any of the other countries.
So is it worth? Well, I'm going to watch
my understanding
season,
is that Australia are not doing a second season, but the States is.
Ooh. Okay.
Well, I'm gonna watch it now then. Is it all right to watch on catch up, or do you feel like you've missed?
Because I did. You can binge it then. And you don't need to watch season one to then watch season two. So I would go to the beginning of season two and just watch that from the start, get caught up, and then you can... and they've done a really... I don't know if they... can't remember if they did this last time, because I got into it really late in season one. So I did a lot of catch-up before getting into watching it on its regular scheduling. But this time they've got it on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the last 2 weeks they've ended on the Friday with a massive cliffhanger.
They're so awful. They just piss everyone off, because there's always a cliffhanger and you're just desperate to know. And everyone, I mean, even Zoe Ball was having a go at Claudia Winkleman, saying, "Why are you making us wait till Wednesday?"
But of course they are, because we're all talking about it in the week. And then there's people like James who haven't watched it, who've got time to catch up. And then, so I think it's genius scheduling from them. But it is very annoying, because I thought it was a Monday to Friday. And then I was very disappointed on the first Monday when it was like, "Oh, no, we're not back until Wednesday."
No.
Okay. So, shall we have a little chat about our super duper super feature? Yellow Jacket Season 2.
Listen to my voice and watch the light. Allow yourself to go back. No matter how difficult it gets, what do you see?
Darkness. We brought it back with us.
It's happening again, isn't it?
We can feel it.
We weren't alone out there.
This isn't where we're supposed to be.
Do not cry about this, Misty. Babies cry.
Kidnapping, cults, death. Your friendships are a little more complicated than most.
I just wanted to quickly say, I watched this as and when it was released. So it was a few months back, and I did want to go back to it. But one of the reasons I didn't go back to it is, unfortunately, I was less enthused with this season than with season one. I felt it was trying to be many things. I felt it was trying to be a little bit Lost. I think it was trying to be a little bit Twin Peaks. I think it was trying to be a little bit Alive, obviously. But really, what it boils down to is it's only really got one premise, and that is obviously all those ladies are starving in the woods, and they're trying to wrap lots of things around it, which kind of got it got a little bit thin for me, including the modern day aspects, which seemed to meander, not meander, as someone said recently. Someone was talking about a film on another podcast, and I went, "Oh yeah, it's called meander. It's the way it moves around." And it's like, I think it's meander. Anyway, none of it really gripped me, and I wasn't surprised when people died, and I wasn't really surprised with the way things were going. I did find the acting quite interesting and quite good, but that's it. That's my review.
Yeah, I think I agree in that it took me a wee while to get back into it. But once I was in, I was like, okay, now I'm going to binge watch. Because I watched the first episode and then I left it for like weeks. Mm. And then, you know, maybe sort of 3 weeks or something. And then I thought, no, I've got to get on with this. So I watched the second, and then in quick succession, third, fourth, and so on came. I agree that it feels like it's become a bit crowded with all these different plot lines going on. And ultimately it was about, you know, I think the first season was great because we were heading back into the 90s kind of, you know, school. We were there ourselves.
That is the good thing about it.
Yeah, we knew what the soundtrack was. And we knew and understood about peer pressure and all that sort of stuff. And then suddenly you're met with being in the wild. And then I suppose this is moving on somewhat to survival. And then what is myth and fantasy? Is that a way to cope? And then it just kind of just lots of these plot lines. And but you know what? It's still really well acted, and the characters are still really strong. I was a bit upset at the end of the season, just with what happened, without giving too much away, because I don't think Megan's seen the end. Bit upset because it also upsets me as to what's going to happen to the person that made that happen, James, if you know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, because that's a surefire way to kind of end two people's lives when we know that, you know, I say lives as in two characters' storylines might end. Got season three already signed up before it was even aired. So yeah, who knows?
Megan, what do you think?
Yeah, so I haven't watched it all. I kind of there was I'm starting to realise that there's not many TV programmes where I'm absolutely desperate to watch another season when I've watched in the timing that it takes to make another season. So if I find a box set that's already got five seasons worth, then I am more than happy to watch back to back. I will absolutely hyperfixate on that season or on that program, and then I'm on a mission. I will absolutely see it to the death. But if I watch season one and then I've got to wait a year or more for season two, I generally don't care about it anymore. And the issue I had with going back into it was I'd forgotten what everything that had gone on. I'd forgotten some of the links between the characters. I couldn't find a recap somewhere because a lot of the time they do season recaps and I couldn't find one. I was watching it all and I just had lost all interest in
even
finding out what actually happened. Like how they were rescued from the wilderness. And
don't know that yet though.
No, but
all right, okay. The thing that's holding
going
you
on the journey.
Yeah, Yeah.
You know,
because
what
that's
thought...
something that would keep you going if you knew that you've got 3 seasons worth,
yeah.
and you could literally go from season one to season two without having this big long gap. I probably would have done, and I'd have kept the momentum and the interest and all of that sort of stuff. But I mostly didn't, and I really struggled around probably episode 3, I think.
Yeah,
I wonder as well. Sorry, go on, Dom.
Yeah, no, and the gap is problematic. But I also just felt it was problematic, that you only had nowadays being today, that you only had the 90s kids just being in the wilderness, that there was still no further flashback into their normal everyday lives. I think,
when they get back?
When they get back, yeah.
Yeah, I think what they have to do, what they're trying to do is, drag out that supernatural element to the story. I don't think we're going to see much of that till the very end. But I wonder if something to do with this is, obviously the way that we get TV now, but these shows are now only really 10 seasons long. Yeah, 10 episodes long, always. Whereas before they were 24 seasons, 24 episodes. Therefore, you're basically watching it for half of the year, whereas you've got an extra 4 months of not watching it. It's quite a long time to go between, especially with, we're going to find that a little bit more with the writer's strike, which kind of slowed everything down, I think. But I agree. I think without the recap or without something to really pull you back into it, it's hard to be interested.
What I found myself doing, instead of watching this or the podcast, I found myself going back to really well-known and programs that I've absolutely watched to death, and I know. And I think that's a real symptom of the time as well, which is I kind of want something, certainly at the end of last year, I kind of wanted something a bit familiar. Didn't have to think too hard about it. Some of this stuff you do have, especially if you have that big gap, you really do have to focus and pay attention. Yeah, yeah. And I've got really rubbish at paying attention when I'm watching telly. So,
nor should you really. I mean, it shouldn't be a chore. I mean, it is supposed to be entertainment. And so you're supposed to be able to slip into these things not have to think too much.
What were you watching that was familiar and comforting?
Well, so I went back and I watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Hey, that's very good, It's underrated.
It is such good telly, and Angel as well. And so I watched the first 3 seasons of Buffy, and then Angel gets his spin-off. And if you watch them... they would broadcast in the same week and there'd be crossover between characters. So if you watch them properly, you can cross over and see, oh, yeah, that's the one where Buffy went to L.A. or, oh, that's the one where Oz went to L.A. or, oh, that's the one where Angel came back. And so, yes, I did that.
That's nice. The thing that I revisited was the Beatles anthology, which I wanted give as a rite of passage to my son Roman, to ensure that he fell in love with the Beatles as personalities rather than just the music, so that he could then really like the new song now and then and understand where that came from. So that was a 10.
Was that the Peter Jackson one?
No, so the anthology, which came out in the 90s.
Oh.
You might remember it. It was, I think there was something like 5 CDs, which were 2 hours long each, so I think it's about 10 hours worth of tape that they then turned into DVDs, but it was a really good deep dive from the start to the end sort of thing. The Peter Jackson thing I can't do to him yet, not until he really fully just
utterly appreciates them on every level.
Because then it's fascinating to watch and
Can I hit you with? Have we kind of moved off?
I was about to wrap it up, but go on. Yeah, you've got another show.
one TV program, which is just joyous and glorious, and
oh god,
and
just I need a bit
everything
of that.
That just tell yeah, me just will make you laugh. It makes me laugh out loud while I'm sitting in the lounge on my own, and that is Amanda and Alan's Italian Job.
We're back in our beloved Italy,
bagging a bargain in Tuscany.
Is that it?
Massive, isn't it? And this time I've taken the reins. Amanda's not going to know what's it up.
Ow!
I'm basically in a hellhole.
Oh my god!
Oh no!
I'm ready for it.
Go, go, go!
Hello, love.
Season two. I mean, season one as well, but season two. So season one, Amanda bought a one euro house in Sicily, and the two of them went over and spent the summer doing it up and renovating it. And then this year, Alan bought a 1 euro house in Tuscany, and they did the same thing. And it is just their friendship. And it's got interiors.
I heard them talking about it on the radio.
It's so lovely, and just all good, warm, lovely things about that television should be. It's just marvellous.
Can I suggest then that next time we meet,
friend who's looking to buy a very cheap place in Rome, because apparently flats there are going for like 5,000 euros. But if it's 1 euro, then in Tuscany, then maybe I should suggest he goes there instead.
I mean, they are derelict.
Yes, yeah, yeah. You have to redo everything. Yeah. That's the same with. What other shows are there? Because I'm coming. I've only just started The Tourist, and I just want. I want a list of really good shows now, because I'm getting through them and I don't want to...
We've just talked about quite a few.
Yeah, but I've seen all of those, apart from, obviously, your...
Well, can I just suggest...
What
I was going to suggest for next month is that we've been talking and we want to look at the new series of True Detective with Jodie Forrester, which we're excited about.
Jamie Forrester.
But also, I think we should talk about Traitors. And I think we should also talk about that show with Alan, what's his name, and Amanda Holden.
The Italian Job.
I mean, it's not fictional or anything like that. I'm not sure how much discussion is going to stand up to, but if you watch it, let me know your thoughts, yeah.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought we'd come in with those three. But our main one for next time is True Detective, which I'm excited about. But also, I'm going to get into this Traitors malarkey and go from there.
Yes.
Any quick requests for Deborah before we sign off, Megan?
Any quick requests for her?
Suggestions?
A couple more.
No, but I will put my thinking cap on and come back with some recs.
Something that you think is, this is just brilliant, it's got to be watched. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Can I suggest that you go back to 1963 and you can watch the colourised Doctor Who and the Daleks, which they just made. You'll find that very interesting. They squashed 8 episodes into about an hour and a half and they've colourised it. So there you go, Deborah. There's a little treat for you.
That's all right. Thank you, though.
Right, that's it then, guys.
Thank you, guys.
So February, yes. See you in February.
Yes. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Ciao, ciao, Bella.
Ciao, ciao.
Arrivederci.